The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
All right. Well, I am not Vina Jones Cox, but I'm Scott Ellsworth. Happy to be here with you tonight, and we have got a guest you are going to love. Many of you know her, but a guest you're going to love. So real quick, though, if you have questions, 877-772-9668, or you can email vinaradio@gmail.com. So our guest tonight is Tiffany Ray. She is a seasoned real estate investor, 30-some years experience in ownership management. She actually owns Ray of Hope Realty Services. And it is just a great. She's going to talk to us tonight about shared housing. So, Tiffany, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here with you. It's so funny. Like, I'm sitting on the other side. I'm actually in studio with Scott today, so we get to share some time together in person. But it's different being on this side. So
there you go.
Let's hear how it unfolds today.
I hear you. All right. So shared housing. So. I shared housing with my kids. Mm-hmm. I share it with my wife. So, So what is this shared housing thing and how does it differ from traditional rentals?
Yeah. Okay. So let's take the what is shared housing first, because you bring up a very interesting concept right off the bat. You said I share with my kids. I share with my wife. Well, multi-generational housing is a thing and that could be a form of shared housing. So simply put, shared housing is just typically two or more unrelated people living in a place together where they have separate or shared bedrooms, but they share the common space. However, because of the economy and things that are happening and people are living longer and they don't want their parents to go to nursing facilities, it could be you sharing it with your family, like a family compound.
Okay.
Now, how it differs from traditional real estate is that when you have a single family house, for example, typically you would rent that to just one family. That's the standard thing. Or right. An apartment building. Right. Maybe you have a two bedroom or a three bedroom. Typically, you still rent that to one family.
Correct.
But in this shared space, the apartments becomes kind of like student housing or maybe a roommate type thing. And then with the single family, let's say you have three, four, five bedrooms. Well, you're renting those out individually.
Okay, well, that is interesting. I think it's interesting because we'll talk about the finances later. Mm-hmm. Sounds like I make maybe more money doing that. So tell me, I had read something that you looked at shared housing also as somewhat of a mission-driven business.
Yes.
And so what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so we know that there is a shortage of housing in America. Point blank, period, end of story. And if you follow the news, yes, it's big. If you follow the news, just a couple of days ago, I think 4 or 5 days ago, there was just an executive order that our President Trump signed about how to make it easier to remove homeless people from the street. So we have an epidemic right now. I will call it that. It's almost to the point of a pandemic of people that are unhoused or people that are transitional that do not have a place to stay. So homelessness is one of the biggest populations. And it's not just because they don't have a job. It could just be because of housing not being affordable. So when I say mission driven, I mean that there's a housing first model, meaning that if you fix the issue of people having shelter over their head, then a whole lot of other things falls into place. They can think straight. They have the ability to go to work. So we're making it a community by utilizing shared housing. We are using compassion. We are solving a need for affordable housing all in with just one real estate strategy.
So I guess sort of you touched on it, but let's sort of be clear. So what are the benefits mm-hmm. to the tenants, mm-hmm. the residents. I like to call them residents.
Resident.
I don't like the word.
Yep.
I don't like the word tenant.
Yep.
Residents. What's the benefit for them, and what is the benefit for the owners of that?
Yeah. So we did talk about the community and the compassion. So. Affordability is the number one thing for the resident. I can afford to live in a place and lay my head that's a quality, safe and healthy housing, whereas maybe I couldn't afford that $1,200, $1,500 rent on my own, but if I split it with somebody and share the cost of the utilities, then I could afford to lay my head somewhere. And you've got the sense of community, the sense of safetiness, the sense of not being alone. So it checks the box for so many things for people and, you know, individually. And then for the actual homeowner, well, you're going to, at a minimum, 2x your amount of rent that you're going to receive.
That's awesome.
right out the gate. I mean, because you are providing more housing for more people. Now, we can get into some of it. They do live a little harder in your home, but there are ways around, sure. you know, and how to fix that. But there are also some tax benefits, and then I'm sure you being Scott Ellsworth, you're going to ask some of those questions, but you get to I guess put your house into play at a reasonable rate because you're not doing the same rehab that you normally would do. So it's a much more cost effective rehab because you're using, I don't want to say lesser quality, but you're standardizing the items that are in the sure. home, for heavy use. And so the list goes on and on and on.
All right. Well, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Tiffany.
All righty.
Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We're here with Tiffany Ray. I wanted to, for a minute though, talk about some, great events coming up Cincinnati REA is putting on. Thursday, the 7th of August, from 5:30 to 9:30 is going to be our Tri-State Real Estate Investing Expo, and trade show. So you're going to have vendors there. There's going to be lots of networking. There's education, free food, door prizes, just a good time. And best of all, it's free. So go to CincinnatiREA.com and sign up. It is free. Anybody can attend. And then Saturday, the 9th, we have our own Tiffany Ray. She is going to be teaching a master class on exactly this. It's entitled Shared Housing for Impact and Profits. So it's going to be a great session, and you're not going to, you know, it's hard with radio or podcast. You just can't go really deep because you've got a very limited amount of time. So this is a great opportunity. It's inexpensive. CincinnatiREA.com. Get there, and listen to what Tiffany has to say about everything, shared housing. All right. So let's talk about, what are some of the myths? What are the greatest myths around shared housing?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's stuff out there that people hear that is just not right.
Well, okay. So there are plenty of them. As with anything that you do, all business, there's always going to be some myths. And so we're here to do some myth busters today. So,
there you go.
Hey, the first thing that I hear everybody, do I have to have a license to get started? That is the number one question that people ask me all the time. And so in real estate, we always say what? It depends. That's right. So it depends. But no, to get started, you absolutely do not need a license because you're able to rent your home out individually by the room. So I'm just going to call it by the room. And it doesn't require a license. However, when you start dealing with what I will call the critical impact residents, so we're talking residential assisted living, Ohio mental health and disability, so class 1, 2, or 3, a client sober living, all of those are going to require a license. And usually you're going to get those with your independent state, and sometimes those come through the health department. But to get started, you absolutely do not need a license. The second one I always get is, do I have to own the home? And do I need a lot of money to get started? Well, if you were a member of REA, which you can learn all about on that Thursday when you come, you would know that there's a such thing called a master lease, right? So if you did not want to repurpose a home that you have, or you did not purchase a home already, then maybe I could rent my home for my shared housing business from you, Scott. And as long as I'm truthful and upfront with you and let you know this is what I'm doing, then it's a benefit for you because you're going to make way more money than you would if you would traditionally rent it. And I'm going to secure the property. Well, you can get that with little or no money down. So it doesn't cost a lot of money and you do not have to own your home. So those are the two big ones. I can do more, but I'm sure you got a lot of more questions.
I do.
All right.
So that brings up a little point that got me thinking. Is this a good strategy for somebody just getting started, or really just it's more for advance? Like you need to have been in this business for a while.
Yeah, so I stumbled on it. I'm just going to be honest with you. I was flipping a house, and I was actually going to sell it. And then two doors down, they were erecting a large, really, really nice condo. And I was like, oh, my God, I need to keep it because my property is going to go up. If I sell it now, I won't make as much. And then I put it on the market, and I didn't like the pricing. And then I stumbled into group homes and shared housing. So I was a beginner when I started. So everybody's a beginner somewhere. I think it's more of a change of mindset to understand that, for example, if you have a 5-bedroom house, you now are an apartment owner because each door is an apartment. If you think about it that way. So it's really a mindset change to I have one tenant or resident. Now I have 5 and they're all individual. They all have their individual paperwork, their own individual needs. Their own, okay. And each resident becomes an apartment.
Okay. So,
no, you can do it if you're new.
All right. So how about zoning laws? So like, can I get a house with 10 bedrooms and put 10 people in there and just whatever I want to do, right?
And here we go again. It depends. So, of course, you see some of the larger states like the North Carolinas, Georgia, Atlanta in particular, Texas. They're building 12 and 26 room single family houses.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, I know, right? So you probably have heard of the company Pad Split, where they're the largest shared living or co-living, I guess I would call it, facility and business there is out there in the industry today.
Okay.
They have these monstrosity houses. And of course, zoning is not an issue in those places because they've recognized that this is a solve to a problem and it helps with affordability. Enter into a place like Ohio, we still have some antiquated laws on the book. And they say 3 to 5 unrelated people. However, there is a protected class. So you can't say that if the person is elderly or if they're mentally handicapped. And I won't say it that because that's what people think. If there's a developmental or intellectual disability,
sure.
They're protected class. So those state laws or code laws, they kind of don't exist. So you're really operating in the gray area until people catch on. But hey, you got to start somewhere and go down to your local office and tell them what you're doing and see if they'll make an exception for you.
All right. Hey, just real quick on, if you got questions, 877-772-9658. You can talk personally with Tiffany or you can email vinoradio@gmail.com. So, we talked a little bit about the zoning and so you probably need to, depending on how big your house is.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people you're going to have living there, you need to check because you don't want to spend all this money, invest it, and get shut down, right?
That's right.
But so what makes a property ideal for shared housing? So if I've got like let's say I've got a 4-bedroom, 1 bath. I mean, is that, you know, what? So what kind of properties?
Yeah, so a 4-bedroom, 1 bath could work. if you were so inclined to do that with that 1 bath, then I tell you, you better make it guys. Because ladies spend too much time in the bathroom. So that is not going to work, right? Okay, but guys, it's possible.
Okay, right.
Because think about it. You've got 4 guys, and maybe one person works nights, one person works days. Maybe there's one person that's retired. But so it depends on your mix.
Okay, so what is the ideal
property? For me, I need a bathroom per every 3 people. So a half.
Okay.
It could be a half. It doesn't have to be a whole.
Okay.
I need your kitchen needs to be large enough for multiple refrigerators, not so much on the common space for the dining room area. And then your bedrooms need to be large enough to consider it a single, or you may employ a strategy where people share rooms. I know people that do that. It just depends upon your strategy. So I like anything larger than a 3-bedroom. And people go, 3-bedroom? How's that work? Okay, well, let me give you a quick example. I've got a $100,000, $120,000 home that's a 3-bedroom. So maybe, let's see, Mount Healthy, College Hill, something like that. Let's say that.
Okay.
And so what is the rent going to be there? $1,200, $1,500 maybe?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So on the two rooms, I'm going to make at least $1,500. So that third room
is gravy.
That's right.
Well, that makes
sense. It depends on what your strategy is. I went for the big houses at first, 7 bedrooms, 8 bedrooms, that. But then I found out that depending upon the property, so you need to size each property and decide what the best strategy is for that particular property. It could work, and you still could 2X your rental income.
I think it seems like the 3-bedroom or under, let's call it under 5 bedrooms. Mm-hmm. Sort of would be nice because you wouldn't likely get into that zoning issue.
That's right.
But I do have a question. So, like, if I had 3-bedroom, my feelings would be I would want at least 1.5 baths.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
that's
the
idea.
If I have to go to the bathroom and you're in the, I mean, that's not going to be good.
Well,
you could put a porta potty outside, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I'm not a fan. Again.
I'm kidding.
Guy, I know it. Guys. And then various job schedules. And the other piece of it is if you don't have that extra, they have to decide that that's okay for them. So they do have some onus of making a decision of where it is that they live. Right. But I'm with you. I like the extra bathroom, but it is doable in a 3-in-1.
Okay. Well, that's good. Okay. So now we've talked about the property.
All right.
And there's lots of other more details we didn't get into, but you're going to go over that on Saturday.
Yes.
So what kind of people and groups typically are ideal for this situation?
Oh my gosh. So 5 years ago when I started this, I would have segmented the resident population to a narrow group of people. But anymore, there are even luxury share housing facilities. So take, for example, your traveling nurses. Really, a lot of people put them in the area of short-term housing, but maybe not. They might be the people that would rent your home long-term. It could be a resident or a fellow. It could be somebody that's brand new to the city of Cincinnati, for example, since that's where we are. And maybe they just onboarded with a P&G. For example, they didn't want to go get an apartment because they really don't know where they want to live.
Sure.
So they might be ideal for your upscale, you know, B neighborhood, B plus neighborhood. But it's anywhere from veterans to the elderly to mental health, alcohol and addiction, substance abuse, homelessness, reentry population, and the list goes on and on. So almost every person that is willing to live in a congregate space is a potential candidate for shared housing.
Well, it's interesting because when I first got to college, bought my first house,
mm-hmm.
it was 4-bedroom. And so I literally had 2 roommates.
House hacking. Yeah.
And then I had a room for my daughter, but it worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
I have a guy that I know, he's out in Connecticut. He has a nice, really, really nice house, and he's got 4 extra bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
He rents those to traveling nurses.
There it is.
And it's perfect.
It's shared housing.
It just works wonders. So let me just remind everybody, Saturday, August 9th, Tiffany's going to be speaking at the online masterclass from 9 to 3 Eastern, Shared Housing for Impact and Profit. And then Thursday the 7th, so a couple days before that, 5:30 to 8:30. Great. If you're in Cincinnati, a great, investing expo and trade show. We're going to have vendors, networking opportunities, free food, door prizes. And it's all free. So go to CincinnatiRIA.com to register for either of those events. Remember the phone number 877-772-9658 and VenaRadio@gmail.com. We'll be back after this. All right, welcome back. I do like that weather forecast. It's going to be, at least around here for in Cincinnati, that it's actually going to get cooler on Friday. It's felt like we're living in Arizona. I know, those from Arizona are like, yeah, you ain't nothing, if you don't, unless you're down here. So anyway, I'm here with Tiffany Ray, owner of Ray of Hope Realty Services. She is an expert in shared housing, 30 years in real estate, and just happy to have her with us tonight. So we've been talking through this. We do have one question from a listener who joined late. She says, hello, Tiffany. Are there building codes that would prohibit shared housing? Anything like that?
Yeah. So when you say building codes, I'm going to just make sure that we're not talking about the population. So I'll answer about the population. We talked about that. So it depends upon what state or even city that you're in. Cities are starting to loosen up. In the city of Nice in New York, there was just a recent order back in February that actually deemed it illegal to say that you could not have multiple people that were unrelated living in a place together. So they are starting to get the just that this is a serious strategy and it's going to help with the homelessness. Now, with respect to the code, well, your code is standard. So unless you're talking about being ADA or a wheelchair accessible compliant, then you don't have to worry about those codes. You're building your regular home or you're rehabbing your home to regular standards.
Okay.
I hope that answered the question. If it didn't, type more, and we'll expound on it a little bit.
Gotcha. Hey, we do have some questions from Mike. Mike, I think we're going to answer most of those during the next few 20 minutes. But if we don't, I'll watch it and make sure that we don't answer that, or that we do answer that. I will make sure we do that. So let's talk a little bit about screening. And do you need to match tenants in a shared, you know, kind of environment that seems to be fraught with drama.
Okay. Listen, okay. In all transparency, I just wanted to get people in my first house and I just put bodies in beds. That was my strategy. Now call it as harebrained as you want. It doesn't matter. That is what I did. I'm going to fill this place as fast as possible. I'm going to make it income producing and the rest will work itself out. Man, that was just a catastrophe. It was the older people didn't like the younger people's music. I didn't have the noise policy that you needed to wear headphones after 10. Some people work nights. Some people work days. It was just a cluster something or another, and you learned, yes, you want to match people and get them in the best place for them. However, there was something to be said about the way that the rapid fire way that I did it, because I learned a lot. I skinned knees. Sure. I came up with some really awesome policies and procedures. And so I understand the idea of making your property income producing. What I will stick with 100% is if you have one house and you have a room, a bathroom, and a kitchen ready, get that first person in there to take some of the load off and make it income producing, and then continue to refine your strategy. But yes, you better match them.
All right. So you sort of referenced it.
Okay.
So what kind of in these kind of situations, what kind of agreements, leases?
Yep.
I'm sure there's house rules. I mean,
yep.
Like I've got a rental, an apartment complex, and there's some general rules like, you know, quiet after 10, don't put trash out there.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the, it seems like there's going to be a lot more.
Okay, look, my house rules are 7 pages long.
Oh,
and they're
gosh.
Probably, hey, you learn. And as you learn, you add on. I am just telling you, but they cover everything from how to deal, what to do in the bathroom, that you cannot leave your personal items in the bathroom. If you do, then this is what, you know, to how you handle food in the kitchen. People get colored plates. They get colored stickers. If you touch somebody's thing, items, this is what's going to happen to you. I mean, so you get really creative with your house rules and designated smoking area. And oh, by the way, no smoking in my place. And I mean marijuana and vapes. So you have to be specific.
Right.
Well, you better, because somebody will come up in there with a vape and they'll say, well, you said smoking and vaping's not smoking. So you didn't. So it's like I'm touching you. It's not. It's vaping. So you have to get creative. Very specific. And as far as the agreements, so you can do it a myriad of ways. Do you want to call your people subscribers? Do you want them to have a license agreement, which I particularly am fond of, over a regular traditional lease? And then there's a residential rental agreement that if you have these license facility that is governed by your state. And oh, by the way, the residential agreements aren't even applicable. The state law, the state tenant law, they're not even applicable to those residential agreements. So again, I'm going to say it depends. So there are various ways to approach this, and we'll talk all about all of those in great detail on Saturday.
Great.
Yeah.
So we had a follow-up question. So is the rule regulation against shared housing common? And in Ohio, you sort of said, yes, it is. So I guess it depends where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think it is a trend towards a rule that you can't have more than five people? Or do you think due to the it's a way?
Yeah, waning. So it's definitely opposite. Like I said, those rules are very old and very antiquated, and they were not even put in place to prevent people from staying together. As I understand it, it was another reason. But what I will say is that there's also a stigma that you have to get over, and it's, I don't want a group home, or I don't want residential living, or not in my backyard. That is for real.
You're gonna create a ex-crack house, right?
Yeah, right? These people aren't gonna be well behaved. There's gonna be problems. There're gonna be outbursts, fights, loud music. I will tell you, my houses are number one. The cutest houses on the block. They are the most manicured houses on the block. Yeah, I have cameras everywhere. So yeah, you do need a camera and a monitoring policy. And I introduce myself in the neighborhood community meetings. I go, I let them know who I am and what I'm doing and why it's going to be great to have me as an owner in the community. So right. I flip script on that and I spin it and I go and I pick up trash and I go, so you make yourself, you know, a positive influence in the community. But no, I think it's going to be trending that they under, that people will learn. And like I said, New York has already put in an ordinance. So, I mean, this is going to be a funny. I say Godzilla always comes to California and New York. So if New York's changing the tide and California's changing the tide, then right. we have to follow. We have to follow. Yeah.
Had one question from Lois. Lois, there was a question. She said, hi, Tiffany, when you mentioned people that may be relocating, you also said, P&G, what does that stand for? So that's Procter & Gamble.
Yes.
Procter & Gamble, which is just a large employer. Their headquarters is here. Yes. They're the ones that make, you know, Pampers and all that
Tide,
kind of stuff. So I was probably not supposed to say that. Mike's
jargon
looking at me
flag.
Like, don't you be talking.
Jargon
no,
flag.
No, don't be talking.
Sorry.
It's a nonprofit.
Sorry.
Anyway, we'll be careful. So, all right. So the other thing I want to talk about is the actual lease. Is it a lease like it is if I rent an apartment?
No. So you are going to have a litany of what I would call, I understand that this is, that I am a resident, that I have to follow these rules. I understand that if I do not pay on time, that A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I understand that I need to follow the resident agreement and the housing rules. That so there is, it is definitely, I'm going to say, very one-sided. It does, you know, understand that they are a resident and that they are paying for something, but it is an agreement. It really is just not a lease. It is an agreement. And
you're going to live this way.
That's right. That's right. And that's what they're attesting to.
So what about, so on a typical, I assume as always, it depends, but, what about expenses? You know, utilities, internet, what about cleaning supplies for like, how do you handle that
stuff? Yeah. So let's talk about utilities. Of course, my water and my, gas and electric are included for the way I do business. However, and those come with limits. So they know, they get a report card. If the water usage or abuse of utilities, then I'm giving you a notice, and that is in my fee schedule. So if I have the air conditioner on and I go by on my check and your window is open, then you get a fine, but that's in my fee schedule because I decided that I didn't want utilities in one person's name and then somebody was supposed to pay money on it and they didn't pay their portion and then I'm, you know, brokering a fight. Like people manage it that way. I choose not to do that. I just choose to make sure that the behavior is respected. And right. So, and I provide water, electric, internet. Those are my standard things. I did, when I first started, provide free laundry. Now, as you know, I'm moving to coin laundry. So that's an upgrade in your business. So another way to add a bolt-on service. So there are ways to stratify this thing so that I really like. But you set your standards out there, and then you modify them as you go. What was the other part of that? I think you asked.
Well, it was things like
piece. Oh, like cleaning supplies. So yeah, let's talk about that.
Which also, along with cleaning supplies, would be who cleans.
Yeah. So that's what your hope is that the people that reside in the facility or in the home, I guess we should call it, they morph into a community. and they clean up after themselves. So you are relaying that expectation at the beginning. This is a clean environment and we expect for it to remain clean. If you don't do your part, then I've even, and these are adults we're talking about, but I've even made cleaning schedules. I've made, hey, it's called an old fashioned chore list. When I was little, I had to wash dishes on Tuesday. Guess what? You're going to wash dishes on Tuesday if you don't clean. So I've resorted to that, and I've resorted to, okay, you guys can't have, this stuff needs to be in your room in a bin, or in some of my group home, we've actually gone to color plates. You get, here's your color is orange, your color's purple, your color's, and so I'll know whose dirty dishes there are. I mean, it sounds elementary, but it actually really works. As far as the cleaning supplies, most people will buy their own, but I will tell you, I'd rather to go through like Santa and leave toilet paper than for you to flush paper towels down my.
Right.
Yep. And I love everything's a dollar. I think that's what it's still called here in Cincinnati. I'm not sure, but once a month I will go through and I look like Santa. I kid you not, but I'd rather supply some stuff because it's a fraction of the cost than you having to get a cleaner or somebody saying, oh, well, I didn't have Lysol, and Lysol is $1.50. And it's an antibacterial. So just factor that in as the cost of doing business and get the stuff so your people can do what they need to do.
So how does shared housing, quote shared housing, mm-hmm. differ from I just rented the house and I got four roommates? Is that shared housing or is that really me renting it?
That's right.
You just happen to get some roommates.
That's right. So I would say that the difference is I, Tiffany, own the home and I rent to four different people. You, Scott, owns the home and you just get three other roommates. So it's still, and you maybe rent for me. Gotcha. So my lease would be with you for the whole entire place.
Right.
And then you would have the right to sublet.
Gotcha.
As opposed to me qualifying each individual person to be in each individual room. So there's a minor difference, but it's subtle.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, the next question, I guess, is do you have any systems or software or things like that you would recommend? I know you're going to go real deep into that stuff on Saturday, but just name, is there some things that are helpful?
Understanding the very population that I service right out the gate outside of Ohio Mental Health Addiction Services. So I'm dealing directly with the state. So that was very easy. They don't have ACH. You get a paper check. So, right. Oh my God. And then there's only so many people you're licensed for. So I'm an old banker. So Excel's my baby. And that's what I started out on. Right. And it works to a certain point. Then, like we talked about, it's time to go to QuickBooks. It's time to, when you're managing over 70 rooms, you need Buildium or Stessa or those types of things. But there's a whole lot of software out there that works. Adobe for your receipt tracking. I mean, you can go on and on and on. So, I mean, there are things that make this thing as slick as snot if that's what you want to do.
Right. So I would encourage you to come Saturday. That is Saturday the 9th, to come to the online masterclass, register at CincinnatiRIA.com. And remember, we also have the Thursday on the 7th. There's a great in Cincinnati Real Estate Investing Expo and Trade Show. Free to attend. Lots of networking, food, vendors. It'll be a great time. If you got questions, 877-772-9758 or vinaradio@gmail.com. We will return and talk about problems.
Ooh.
Hello, welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I want to make a correction because I apparently was speaking too fast and I missed a digit, and you'll be calling somebody's house at night and they're not going to be happy. Questions is 877-772-9658. VinaRadio@gmail.com. Here with Tiffany, a great gal, owner of Ray of Hope Realty Services, and she's really, you know, she's driven by a commitment to uplift the community. So it can be profitable and it can help solve problems. So I think it is awesome. And I think with the way our economy has gone, and just the way it is naturally, that it's just really expensive to live. And we got to find some solutions for those that can't afford that
That's right.
Housing. It's just good or bad. Right or wrong, I don't care. The thing is, it's there.
That's right.
What the economy is, and we got to do that. So let's talk about, I want to talk about two things with a little bit of time left. And one is sort of management, some conflict resolution. And then I want to talk a little bit about numbers.
Okay.
So what are some, what are really common challenges that when managing shared housing, what are the some of the big challenges you have with that?
So
how do you address them, too?
Well, absolutely. So I think it depends on your population. So let's take, for example, like I said, I started with the group home. That one's licensed. And most of those residents come from Ohio mental health addiction.
Okay.
So we know that they're going to come with some maybe behavioral problems and those types of things. And so you have to be sensitive still to the fact that those are human beings, too. And that they may be have a crisis, a meltdown. Something could trigger them. So you need to, number one, for me, a female, you know, and I do have a house manager that works alongside me now, but both of us are female. And so we're in a predominantly male environment. So safety is a big thing and not probably something that people think about very often, but it's much like realtors. When you go into an empty house, you know, you need to mind your area. So you need to give people adequate space, those types of things. But those are things you need to think about. And we'll talk about strategies, on Saturday and things that you have to protect yourself. So that's one. And then knowing the right numbers, you know, did you know that there was a crisis hotline? And there's a 877 number for that. Did you know that there was a LGBTQIA hotline number? Most people don't even know that. It's national. That's right. So educating yourself with what happens if. And oh, by the way, when most of the people are over 65, they're elderly. So last summer we had a outage where it was 2 days in the summer. If you remember that in Fairmount, we were 2 days without, that's right.
No power, two days
without power. That's right. So I took, not my responsibility, but I took light flashlights. Everybody had flashlights. We had a big cooler with ice and water and all those things that I did. Like I left my home at 9:30 to get there to make sure that they had those things. So you have to think about who is your population that you're serving and what happens if. It's always the what if. And oh, my favorite, and we'll talk about that guy, is man on fire. Well, I had a guy that had a meltdown. He set himself on fire, not the house, himself.
Wow.
And yeah, this really, really happened. And so it's like, oh my God, the first thing you think about is he okay? And then the second thing, oh my God, my house. So you have to learn how to manage those things.
Is there somebody, or maybe it depends, so do you need a property manager, house manager at every property or just on some?
No, I think because there are so many different people and personalities living that I do my own property management, but now I have a house manager and I have another person that comes alongside. She's working about 15 hours a week. So I've grown into this, but you need to
But she's not living in any
No. So no, none of my facilities require in-house living. No, they might require like a certain hour, a level of care, or the person might have somebody that comes along, an independent care provider that comes alongside them. But you could have somebody that needs to live in. I don't do that. No. And it's not required.
So do you, how often do you inspect the property?
Yes, I do. And I do that monthly because I'm changing my filters monthly. Because think about it. You got all these different people moving around. It's hard on your equipment where most people might not change their filters for 60, 90 days. I change my filters monthly. I also am using a hair remover in the drains, or I'm putting Simple Green down the drains so that I don't get gnats, or I'm using Green Gobble so that I don't have to worry about a plumbing issue. So I like the monthly. Some people may call that overkill, but I think I've kept up on my maintenance that way, and it keeps me from having a lot of problems.
Okay.
Yep.
So what attracts a resident to want to live in a shared housing environment, one of your places, versus the apartment? I know there's a cost issue.
Yep.
Beyond
that's
cost,
number one.
Are there other issues? Are there other things?
So, you know, and I don't want anybody to get offended by this, but if it's not cost, it could just be, I couldn't qualify.
Oh, that's true.
That's right, because most times it has to be three times the amount of the rent, and it has to be, the income has to be a certain place, the credit has to be a certain place, the eviction have to. So I really consider myself a second chance housing. So my qualifications, although they are standard across the board, and I require the same thing from a fair housing, it still allows that person that may have had a little trauma in their background to be able to still reside in a place. So that, I mean, that could be a main factor outside of other situation. I've had a lady that came from domestic violence. She didn't have time to find an apartment. I need to leave right now, and I need to be someplace that's controlled, you know, monitored, and that is safe for me. And, and we were able to offer her that spot.
And do you find those issues you talked about before with between residents or just meltdowns? Are those like we have them every week, or
no.
They just, oh my. You know, how, like, because people sometimes look, I don't want that. And you're like, well, yeah, it happens twice a year or something.
Yeah. Not only that, and you're going to decide the type of resident that you want. So maybe you decide that you want only veterans, or you might want only the elder population. I'm sorry, they're playing bingo and doing stuff. Right. You know
so
what I mean?
So you can sort of pick and choose.
Yeah, you pick and choose. That's right.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about profitability.
Sure.
You sort of talked about rent. So,
yep.
You know, what does a rent, because we look at, you sort of talked about 2X or 3X, but what is it like if I'm going to come to you and I'm going to rent a room, what's that typically going to cost?
Yeah. So a good gauge for how to set your rooming cost is, If there's anything that's around you that's a studio apartment.
Okay.
Right? Because they're going to offer something like the size of the room is going to be relatively similar. Or if there's some type of extended stay. So you're going to beat that extended stay. So if they're at $200 a week, then you know I'm going to bump below this and I'm offering a nicer place, maybe not the same crowd. So I can, and my neighborhood is X neighborhood, so rents go for this. So I'm going to say anywhere from the $600, $650 up to about $750, $800 for the room, depending on where you are geographically, depending on the size of the room, depending on the amenities that you offer. And that's standard co-living by the room offering. Of course, when you get into the specialized areas, you know, when you're talking about licensing, you're talking anywhere from $1,500 to, you know, if you're doing residential such as assisted living, it could be eight grand a month. So it depends.
That is
a wide range.
Right.
Yep.
So when you look at profitability, you've obviously got expenses.
Yep.
There's other kinds of expenses you wouldn't have in a normal rental, unless they're providing that, and that's not going to be necessarily the fact. So typically, from a profitability standpoint, compare that to traditional rentals. I mean, what's it like?
I'm still percentages higher over it, and I need to actually. That's a good thing. I probably need to do the math to be able to say I'm still 30% or 40% higher. But if I had to classify, I still know that from a not gross rents, but net, I'm still making way more than I would in a normal place because I'm controlling my cost. So there are all kinds of aspects to this. Like if reusing, rotating locks as opposed to new locks every time, rekeying. So you learn how to cut expenses for each home. You know what I'm saying? And so my beds, so some people have beds, some people don't. When I first started, I would buy all the beds and they would, but now, Salvation Army, and I got a little person there, and they'll tell me, "Oh, we got five beds in, and they're $15 a piece," and I'll just go get them. You know,
there
so you learn, right? You learn how to cut expenses.
All right, so we got just a very little bit of time.
Yep.
If you had one tip, you have to give one tip to somebody who wants to start down this path of shared housing, what would that be?
It would be, this is a blue sea strategy. You hear a lot about wholesaling, a lot about short-term rentals, but the competition is very stiff, and there are regulatory issues out there that are against them. They are saying that it doesn't help the economy. This is a, as they would say, a do good and a do well. You get to help your own self build generational wealth. make a great cash flow and help somebody and solve an issue at the same time. So you're a godsend to people that may not have an opportunity to have a great place to lay their head. So this is now is the best time to jump in.
That is a great investment. Well, Tiffany, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming on tonight. It's been great having you here. You've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Until next time, remember, where others just see property, mm-hmm. we see possibility. Keep investing smart. See you next week.